You've heard that time is money. Well, consider this an investment on a way to building wealth that's always right on the money. We're sitting down with local experts that all have a mind for money.
Hello and welcome to A Mind for Money with Citizens Bank. My name is Timmy Stanifer, and as always, I am your host. And today with me, I have Seth Bonesteel again, and we are going to be returning to that new format we had started taking on last time, looking at what is going on in the market at large, both the economic, stock market, policies, all that stuff, and the banking market, and how that might affect you individually. So Seth, thanks for coming back and joining us today. I guess in this new format, we don't need to introduce you every time if you're going to be somewhat regular, but
yeah, thanks for having me back. And yeah, it's amazing how much more we have to talk about in just a few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, and I figured this would be a big episode just because even though we don't want to be a politically leaning podcast, obviously we want to talk more about finance and not politics and opinion pieces and stuff like that. But the way that the economy is moving and shaking right now is obviously very tied to politics. So we're going to be touching on some of the things that have happened, not giving opinions on it or anything, but just bring up some of the things that have happened in the most recent national election and what some of the proposed new policies might be and what experts are saying that may do to the market and how that can impact you. So it's kind of impossible to fully dodge any sort of politics whatsoever, but we're not going to be, you know, giving our opinions on the election or anything like that. Again, to start, we're going to be looking at a glimpse at the market post-election. We've had almost a month of movement since the election and just look at what's happened, what things are trending different directions, how different sectors might be affected. And also on top of the election, it was quarter three earnings have been coming in this month for a lot of companies. And so that's a lot of different factors all mashing at once. We're going to talk again about rates because that maintains a hot topic. Prime has gone down again, but interest rates on treasury notes are still going up, which is really interesting and something we're going to talk about. And then we're going to talk about the housing market a bit. And although, you know, rent has seen steep inclines in prices over the past couple of years, it appears that the monthly cost gap between renting and owning a home is bigger than ever, or at least recent history. That percentage gap between the cost to you as a renter versus the cost to you as a new homeowner if you were going to try to buy a home. And that's besides, you know, closing costs and stuff. So we'll get to that. But yeah, let's start talking a little bit about the market. You know, going back to the beginning of the month, the election happened, and you might have heard something about a bump in the market. Some people were calling it the Trump bump. Just, you know, it's got a nice ring or whatever to it. But, you know, Donald Trump did win the election for the presidential candidacy, and there was a bit of market reaction after that. Steph, do you want to talk a little bit about what we saw in those first couple days in the general market?
Yeah. So like you said, you know, regardless of how you vote or what side of the aisle you're on, so to speak, there are whether you like that income, the result, or you don't, there's just some realities that we're going to see based on results. So as Timmy said, in the days and weeks following the election, the market reacted pretty positively. And there's a number of things that influence that. You know, the market is a very complex thing. There's a lot that goes into it and influences it. So we'll get into some of those things. A lot of it, again, a lot of the economy and a lot of how the market reacts is just based on expectation of what is to come. Mm-hmm. Prior to the election, there was a lot of uncertainty, just not knowing which way the election would go, because that influences policies and you know, just other things that we'll talk about. But, you know, certainly the like, if you want to call a gut reaction, mm-hmm, that the market had, it was that, okay, at least now we have a direction. We know who won. And, you know, we think that maybe some favorable things are on the way.
Mm-hmm. And so there was a very quick bump in value in a lot of sectors. Not all, but quite a few of them. And then there was a pretty quick reaction and reset. Now, overall, generally, the market has still been going up, but there was almost a very quick snippet as to something we've talked about a couple times recently, a quick bump and correction, which was really interesting to see in a really, really tight window. You know, something that usually will happen over months happened in, you know, a couple of days or weeks, where it went up really high in some sectors, dropped again, but then still kept growing and maintained general growth to where it was prior to the bump. So, you know, that's just a good example of, you know, what growth in a correction looks like, because it was a really concentrated look into that. You know, the bumps and the general amount of growth has faded a little bit. There still is general growth, but it's not obviously as extreme as it was those first couple days or week. And as new cabinet members are getting announced, sometimes they're, depending on that person's track record, there are some sectors that have seen bumps or fades, you know, and that's happening actively, you know. Mm-hmm. Every couple days there seems like there's an announcement of someone that's been selected that will sit on the cabinet or have some sort of seat or head of treasury, things like that. So depending on their history and their tendencies for policy making or voting, that has been influencing different markets as well, just based on confidence that people might have for what they think is going to happen. Like you said, it's all very expectation based.
Oh, very much so. And it's, even though we know the results of the election, and we have some direction, I guess, there overall, with these announcements, specifically what we've seen in the last few weeks is who's going to take on the different cabinet positions, the market is almost overreacting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When an announcement is made, like either good or bad. What's important, of course, is to, if you see a jump followed by a correction, if you see a drop followed by something, you know, a rebound, look at the trend.
Mm-hmm.
Don't look at what happens on a daily basis, because it's going to look kind of all over the map. It's really important to look over a longer time period, just to see how we're trending. Mm-hmm. Are we going up? Are we going down?
Yeah, and another interesting timeline, just things meshing all at once, like I already mentioned, is quarter three earnings for almost all large companies are coming out throughout the month. And there's some really, you know, there's some companies that did well, some that didn't do as well. And I think it from what experts were saying and from what we're seeing empirically, there are some sectors where that overreaction because of the election is also kind of getting targeted at stocks as well. There are some stocks that, you know, based on their earnings saw a huge jump, based on their earnings saw a huge drop. Like, for example, Target, everyone knows Target. You know, if you look at Target, you'd think, oh, they're doing great, there's always people there, but they had a pretty poor showing quarter three in their earnings report. And they saw in a single day over 20% drop in value in their stock. They were up over $150 per share, down to about $120 in a single day, just off the cliff. Now, you know, large cap stocks have history, so you can look at what that may be, but it's interesting how, you know, that is not a historically common drop in a single day.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of feels like people's gut reactions to things are, because of the election, are also amplifying their gut reactions in the market. And it's a very interesting and volatile time. And, you know, we are seeing a general trend for the market to be going in a better direction, you know, because what this means for us is, you know, per usual, it's hard to be sure, but it seems, even though everything's still really confusing, the market is generally heading in a good direction. Inflation is still kind of, it's slowing down, but it's still heading, inflation is still heading down for total inflation, but unemployment's still on the rise. Mm-hmm. Too, so it's a weird back and forth there, and you know, time will tell how it shakes out. And another thing a lot of experts are talking about is obviously the new economic policies are going to have a big impact on what the market will do. And an interesting thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is it's not just the policy itself that impacts the market, it's how people react to those policies, almost even more so.
Mm-hmm.
Because the policies can guide how a market works, but it doesn't make the market happen. I mean, how the market happens is really up to the people invested and involved in moving money and stuff. So do you want to touch on some of the proposed policy by the incoming administration for 2025?
Yeah. So some of the big things that are on the radar, I think the three biggest things in my mind are whether we're going to see tariffs enacted on imports. You know, that obviously can drive prices, that can, you know, with the talk of inflation being sticky, how is that going to play in? We'll have to see what happens with corporate taxes also, if there's some different policies that come into play there. Generally, if corporations feel that they are going to see tax breaks, that is that stimulates them. You know, they think they're going to be able to reinvest money into their companies rather than be spending that money on taxes. So that can have a positive bump too. And then too, we have to think about what government spending is going to be like. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be, government spending has been pretty elevated the last few years. Is it going to stay at that, or are we going to see some cooling down there? Because that government spending is part of overall GDP. You know, of course, consumer is a big part of that as well. But we have to see just how all of these policies impact what happens in the economy.
Yeah, because for the government, I mean, at the basic level, for the government to spend money, it needs money from taxes.
Right.
And, you know, so they all play together. Another interesting point, something that I just actually heard about this morning, is the one of the questions that's still in the air is, if tariffs do get in place, where are there going to be, like, what countries are they going to affect imports from? And for those who don't know, a tariff is a tax on a good that was imported from another country. So, you know, a lot of stuff that we consume here in America is created in other countries. And that still affects things even like vehicles. You know, that's a big one that always gets talked about, is tariffs on a lot of people have Japanese vehicles, Toyota, Lexus, Nissan, Acura, Honda, you know, lots of big companies, or, you know, a lot of European cars, you know, Volkswagen, is probably the biggest one, or Mercedes and Audi and all of those, BMW. And so there's a lot of, you know, different cars that would affect, but that's just because that's a big ticket item. People think about
right.
that more.
Mm-hmm.
But it would hit, you know, it'd be percentages on smaller items as well. But the other thing, like I was mentioning, is, well, there's questions now, will there be imports tariffs from Canada and Mexico even too, you know, North American tariffs, and it's possible. So that's another thing that's, it's all up in the air, and we don't know. It's just,
yeah.
it's all just kind of nebulous proposed ideas, because obviously as a running platform, you need to have the policies you want to enact as an administration. So those were proposed for a long time in the running. But obviously the implementation of those, whether or not they are implemented, the tax cuts for corporations, the tariffs, there's also talks about resuming possible drilling and oil manufacturing within the states, and that has impact on GDP, but also environmental. That's a whole the other side we don't talk about.
But regulation,
but
for
but
sure.
It is regulation.
If there's a loosening of some regulations that can open up options to industries that maybe they haven't had in recent times. And again, with most things, you are weighing your pros and your cons of doing so.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, specific to the markets, they're looking at the financial pro.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for
sure. Are there financial, you know, things that can, again, help companies just improve their bottom lines, because ultimately that's what will drive, you know, higher market.
And again, that's what we're focusing on here. Obviously, all these policies have ethical things behind ethical questions
or
ethical implications. not in our field at all, and not what we're going to talk about. But we're just talking about how that may impact the market, and that is a reason why this administration was put into place were these policies. So important to touch on. And talking about another thing this administration wants to do is try to cut rates. They've talked about that a lot, but that also leads us into the next topic of rates again. Prime is down again, down another quarter.
at the beginning of November.
Yeah, the beginning of
shortly
November.
Shortly after the election, actually. Mm-hmm.
And which was projected, you know, it was going to happen. Most people were expecting that regardless of the result. They were kind of expecting a cut either way. But Treasury rates are still up. We're still seeing that inverted yield curve, and it's growing more disparate, it seems, over time. Do you want to touch a little bit on that and what we might be seeing? I know that experts are already talking about what they expect to see in the near future based on historical evidence and stuff too. But
yeah, so specific to the Fed funds rate, which we talked about last time, which is what the Federal Open Market Committee meets about every 6 weeks to review where that rate is set. That is the rate that impacts the prime rate, which is what a lot of consumer and some commercial borrowing is based on. As you mentioned, it was dropped to 25 basis points, which is a quarter of a percent, in just a few days after the election. There's another meeting mid-December. Right now, it's about 50-50. Half of the experts think they're going to leave rates where they are, and the other half think we're going to see another quarter percent rate cut. So, you know, there's a lot of time between now and mid-December. As of recording this, that's still about 3 weeks away. So, you know, there obviously a lot will go into that. A lot could change between now and then when they actually have to either pull the trigger or stay. But beyond December, you know, there's thought that the Fed funds rate and therefore the prime rate is going to come down a little bit over the next year or so. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about getting to the super low rates we saw, you know, at pretty much the onset of the pandemic.
Yeah, and those are just unprecedented circumstances that we'll probably not see again in our lifetime, but you never know.
It would take something like a pandemic probably, you know, some really huge, just blockbuster type of event that would really probably not be seen coming and impact everything the way that did. Now, Treasury rates, they are down. Short-term rates are down from where they were, but they're still, and we're seeing the longer-term rates go up, which is more normal. It's, you know, historically, short-term rates are lower and long-term rates are higher.
And yeah, but even today, still the 1 year rate still went up a nudge, and that's still kind of short. So it's interesting that they're still going up, while prime and the Fed rate are going down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
because move in tandem in some capacity.
Into some capacity, and it's almost like the the Treasury rates that have been, again, that inverted yield curve means that the short term rates were higher than the long term. You know, it's kind of like things are shaking out. You know, slowly. Probably getting back to what would be considered normal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to take some time. And it's interesting, too, that right now, if you look in the middle of it, the long-term rates are going up. Short-term rates are still high. It's the midterm, like a five-year treasury is about the low point right now.
Yeah, it's almost like a U. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Again, there is some historical data for these types of weird rate situations. In the mid-90s, there was a bit of a economic hardship that happened that ended in a soft landing, which is what obviously the government is hoping for, a soft landing or even just a full recovery without any sort of landing. And at that time, the Fed did start dropping the Fed rate and all this, obviously ultimately prime rate, while maintaining the Treasury maintained higher rates and actually saw a short-term surge in prices. So the experts in the Federal Reserve and at the Treasury, you know, they know what they're doing and have the historical data of what will help maintain spending at a good level while also maintaining a drop in inflation, which is ultimately the goal. Obviously, no one wants inflation to go super high. So it's likely that Treasury rates will start to drop in 2025. That's what a lot of experts are saying. As we keep seeing prime rate go down, the Treasury rates will eventually start to drop a bit too. But there are still obviously some uncertainties. Once the new administration is in place and there's new people making decisions and stuff too, that can affect where those rates might go as well. So the level of drop and where it all settles, you know, no one's really sure right now. But the general consensus among experts is it will see it eventually go down and level out a bit because we're still trending in a good direction towards a soft landing, which, you know, there were still some talks of, you know, well, is there going to be a recession or not? Most people are feeling the soft landing is much more likely, which is where we had been trending for the last couple months, mm-hmm. which is nice. And it's nice that the post-election shakeups haven't really messed with that. You know, there was some uncertainty with that election results, regardless, either way, just from uproar from either sides, that there could be issues and market uncertainties to a level that made it look like a soft landing might not be the norm, but mm-hmm. or the normal trajectory. But it looks like that's what we're back on pace for sure.
Yeah, I heard it put recently that we're probably in for a soft landing, or like you said, no landing, where mm-hmm. it's just, we just kind of roll forward, just slow, sustained growth. You know, mm-hmm. we really don't have, you know, what a recession is that would be. If we don't have a soft landing, if we have a hard landing, would be the recession. That's a constriction. That's, mm-hmm. you know, a shrinking of the economy. And it happens, you know, the economy is a cyclical thing. But when you can avoid a hard recession, certainly you want to, because mm-hmm. that can really, there can be impacts that really start affecting people's everyday lives. So,
yeah.
Again, a soft landing would just be, you know, probably best case scenario, or the no landing, where we just kind of slowly crawl,
just roll back into normalcy.
Yeah, you just kind of like carry on from here, and yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I've heard less talk about the R word.
Yeah,
the recession just isn't being talked about as much as it was. It doesn't seem inevitable, which I guess for a period it kind of did, and it's like, oh, we're not there yet. So
yeah, and there are still some questions. Obviously, like we mentioned, the tariffs is something that no one's really sure how it's going to fully affect things, mm-hmm. and there are some concerns being voiced with how tariffs might affect employment if costs go up for people, and unemployment's already a bit of a topic that it's the one thing that kind of isn't trending the right way right now. So, you know, there are some questions with how that might affect, but we don't know for sure. That's just one of the things being talked about that keeps that conversation a little more active than mm-hmm. it otherwise might be when you look at the other factors. Because when you look at a recession, the things you think about, the big things are gross domestic product. So, you know, the total growth, the total output of the nation, and general market growth, and employment levels as another big thing. So if the market's doing really healthy and, you know, in general, we're putting out big numbers as a nation, but unemployment's not in a good spot, then that's a weird imbalance that isn't a recession, but it's just mm-hmm. something that then the government looks at and then tries to tackle in a different way, because they have their different strategies for trying to tackle different issues within the market.
One thing we should mention too, not a long-term thing, and it happens every year, but we just happen to be on top of it now, is how the holiday season is going to impact the, you know, just market in general and in the outlook as we go through the last month of the year, because we were talking about how companies really bank in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, especially retail or anyone doing sales.
Yeah, it can really make or break your year, how you perform during the holiday shopping season. So again, it happens every year, and it's not anything that's going to long-term impact the economy, but in the short term, it's going to, you know, it's compounded with these other things. We're having the change in administration. We're having a holiday shopping season. We're, you know,
we're going off of quarter three results and then trying to, you know, again, same example of Target. Quarter three was really bad, but they could have a, you know, absolutely awesome quarter four and then be doing better than they were before. Mm-hmm. And, just because that's the cyclical nature of retail on top mm-hmm. of it too.
Yeah. Again, nothing new. It happens. Well, holidays happen once a year, and the change of administration can happen every 4 years. So it just makes for a lot of, you know, influences that are pushing and pulling against what's going on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the last thing we wanted to touch on is the price gap that we're seeing between renting and owning a home. I've touched on it before, and just the general cost of home ownership in general and where we're at. And again, this is something that with a healthier reset to the economy, hopefully we see some of these costs become more reasonable for, especially for new home buyers. But you know, the common understanding historically is that, you know, owning a home is more expensive than renting, but it's usually not that much more expensive once you pay your upfront costs, your down payments, your closing costs on owning a home. There are studies that show on average that it's about 15% more expensive per month because you also have other regular things that you have to pay for besides the mortgage. You got taxes, you got insurance, you have upkeep, you know, you might have to replace a refrigerator, you know, things like that. But lately, there's newer studies showing that the people who are buying a house within the last couple of years at the higher cost of houses and the higher rates, the average monthly cost difference between renting and owning is more between 34 to 37% is what I saw. So that's big. I mean, and renting's already very expensive too. So, and you know, there are some factors that aren't as obvious that are affecting it. It's not just the costs of the houses that have gone up. It's not just the, obviously rates are really high and that really affects how much you pay. Taxes on properties have gone up in a lot of places, but also a couple want things that people don't think about and don't think about at all when they buy a home. Homeowners insurance has gotten a lot more expensive and PMI, private mortgage insurance, which is something a lot of people don't even know exists, has gotten more expensive and has become more common because we've talked about this on podcast episodes before, but what PMI or private mortgage insurance is if you buy a house and you put less than 20% down, it is an insurance policy that you have to have on it that insures the bank that if you got foreclosed on, that they would be able to make up losses if you tanked the value of the house, you ruined the house and they had to foreclose on it, you know, something like that. It doesn't happen super often, but it's something that became the norm after the housing crisis in the late 2000s. So the less you put down, the higher PMI payment you have per month. So, you know, with the cost of houses being more expensive, people are typically being able to put less money down on a house, and then they have a higher PMI payment just because they've only got 5 or 10% down. And then on top of that, just the base rate of that PMI is more expensive. So there's just a lot of things like that that have just gotten more expensive on a monthly basis for the homeowners. And, you know, I think an interesting thing to consider is, well, you know, the age old argument is you should buy a house as soon as you're able to, just because you're building an asset then, which there is merit to, but is there an argument that that's not the case anymore?
I don't know. I think if you are taking a long-term approach to it, if you are in a position to buy a home and you can, you know, justify that cost, there's certain things that change. For example, you may buy a house and it's more expensive and the mortgage rate may be high now, but would you be able to refinance into a lower mortgage rate in a few years? You know, mortgage rates fluctuate over time. You know, they go up, they go down. The chances that you're going to be stuck with a high rate on your mortgage for a long, more than, I don't know, let's say 3 or 4 years is probably unlikely. If you are still creditworthy and can get approved for a mortgage again in a few years when rates are lower, you're probably going to be able to lower your monthly payment. So, you know, it really depends on what your needs are too. You know, if you plan to stay in a home for a long time, you know, you think you're looking at 5-10 years that you're going to be staying put, you know, maybe buying still does make sense because your property is going to appreciate. It's going to go up in value, especially if you take a longer and you can, you know, benefit from that. But if you're looking to move around or anything, you know, maybe renting, you don't want to make that commitment for several reasons. You're not going to get the benefit of a lower rate. You're not going to get the benefit of a property value that's increased over 10 years. You know, there's certain things like that that, you know, you need to take into consideration, not just what works for my budget. You know, and a lot of people have gotten creative too with living situations, with, you know, staying, you know, having a roommate, or, you know, there's adult children that are staying, living with parents longer, maybe trying to get a bigger down payment saved up for a house or something like that.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot more common. And, you know, depending on where you're at in your life too, I've heard this from other people, and I myself did the same thing where I owned a property and I sold and I'm renting now because the value had gone up over time and I didn't, you know, it was somewhere I was looking to move out of anyways. But that plan is only contingent. I mean, that plan is contingent on finding a good place to rent where it makes sense to actually sell your place and move out. Because if mm-hmm. you're going to then go rent somewhere that costs just as much money, well, then you're spending as much money and you're not building an asset. So right. that's mm-hmm. part of the issue that a lot of people are running into nowadays too, is it feels just as expensive to rent some places, but it also, when you really look at the cost of home ownership right now, it is pretty high. But mm-hmm. like Steph mentioned, some of that stuff does go down over time. You can refinance at a lower rate. PMI will eventually fall off of your home once the value of it is great enough that the loan is only consuming 80% or less of the value of the home, or what's called loan to value. So some of that stuff will change. Some stuff will get more expensive though. Your taxes are probably only going to go up. Your insurance is only going to go up.
Hazard insurance,
you know?
Yeah.
Yep. So there's some things that are really only going to get more expensive, mm-hmm. but you know, with inflation and your general cost of living going up, that's part of what gets considered when cost of living raises and stuff happen. And
the way I look at it too is, if you think about if you're renting, mm-hmm. Your landlord is going to have a higher premium on their the homeowner's insurance they have to carry on the property. The taxes that they pay is also going to go up. So it's probably, even though that's not your direct cost as a renter, you're going to see your rent go up to accommodate the mm-hmm. increase of just housing in general.
Yep. Yeah, and the way, you know, I looked at it myself, and maybe if other people are in the same, it's not common, but if you're trying to decide between the two, one of the things to consider is, you know, what is the total cost of your rent? Because that's just a sunk cost, right? That's just money that's going away from you, you're not getting back. Versus what is the total cost of the parts of your mortgage that are sunk costs too? Because, you know, yes. your taxes are effectively a sunk cost mm-hmm. to you. That's money you're not getting back.
You have to pay them,
the interest,
yeah.
the interest you're paying on it is, you know, money you're not getting back. The money that's going back to you is, you know, the asset part of it, paying down the principal. And, right. you know, you obviously can't predict the accrued value of your property. But that's just one thing, you know, if you're trying to do a little bit of number crunching, something that helped me make the decision is, you know, the place I found, it made sense, the cost of the rent versus what I was paying in total interest and taxes and everything. You know, homeowners dues and things like that, because that's another thing. If you live in somewhere with a homeowners association mm-hmm. or condo yeah. association, that's money you're paying that, you know, goes towards services for you. But it, again, money you're not getting back.
It's it's money you're burning in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's just a thing you can consider when you're trying to decide between the two. And, you know, something I've kind of recommended to people, at least in this area too, is it seems like some of the better deals for renting are kind of the old fashioned way of finding places to live. Finding places with for rent signs and calling the homeowners, because those are usually just smaller time landlords that just own an extra property or something and they want to rent. They might have owned it a long time, so they might have better rates for rent. That's, you know, mm-hmm. you might get lucky with it, but you know, it's more work than going on apartments.com necessarily, but and you know, another thing you consider too is the area you're living in. Some areas are really expensive. Out by us, Brookfield is super expensive.
Right.
You know, Waukesha, certain areas of it are cheap, certain areas are really expensive. Even out further by where our headquarters is, Maguanago's gotten pretty expensive. East Troy has gotten pretty expensive. You mm-hmm. know, there's some of the smaller towns are becoming more desirable. So some people are, and there's not as many apartment complexes.
Demand,
so
yeah.
So the demand is outweighing mm-hmm. a lot of the supply.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a conversation again that I don't want to get into because yeah. there's two sides to it. But, yeah. you know, the affordable housing, however you care to define that,
sure.
you know, is kind of a hot button topic. And some people believe that there isn't enough affordable housing. What's affordable again? And what does, you know, that bring into your community? Again, a lot of debate there, whether it's good or bad. But mm-hmm. I think that there's no doubt that, you know, if you're like a young person starting off and trying to get out on your own, it's tough because there is demand for, you know, something that somebody can afford. And again, it may be staying at home longer, maybe taking on a roommate, it may be getting creative with other things, having to have a second job just yeah. to make rent.
Yeah, cost of living does remain a pretty hot button issue, and I'm sure it will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it always is in some capacity, but it definitely has been more as of late. And I think with that, we're gonna start wrapping up here today. Gone, I think, close to a half hour here, talking about a bunch of different stuff here. But again, this is kind of the format we're gonna keep maintaining, talking about what's currently going on in the market, in the bank world at large. You know, when new regulations come through, we'll probably touch on them, how it's going to affect consumers and how it's going to affect you as an account owner and things like that. But if you ever have questions, obviously, go to your local bank, ask your banker, and see what they can help you with, your financial advisor, your insurance agent, things like that. And if you have feedback or suggestions for episodes or topics we should maybe touch on that are going on in the world of finance right now, you can reach out to me directly at heytimmy@amindformoney.com. That's H-E-Y-T-I-M-M-Y at amindformoney.com. And Steph, thank you again for joining us and talking today. Mm-hmm. And we thank you all for watching and listening, and hope you have a great rest of your day.